Okay, we're going to start here on Nun Amud Aleph, 13 lines down. Gemara is continuing to discuss what we had mentioned in the Mishnah, which is Akola Kasher LaDun Kasher LaEid, V'yeshe Kasher LaEid, V'enu Kasher LaDun. That principle that was laid out in the Mishnah, the Gemara asks Latuy Mai. So Rabbi Yochanan says that comes to include Suma V'chat Me'enav. Someone is blind in one eye, the Shita to Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir makes a hekesh between Nigaim and Rivim, between Tzorat and the adjudication of matters. So therefore, he says, number one, just like by Nigaim, you have to be able to see them, so too by the Rivim, the judge has to be able to see B'shteinav. Just like by Nigaim, it's during the day, so too by the Rivim, it must be by the day. And just like by Rivim, it can't be with relatives, so too by Nigaim, it can't be with relatives. So based on that, Rabbi Meir disqualifies a judge who's a Suma B'chad Me'enav, but a Suma B'chad Me'enav would be kasher to Lahayid, to testify. So we mentioned yesterday in the Tosafot for the Rabbanan, since they do not have this Hekesh, even a Suma B'shteinav would be fine to judge. He'd be Pasul Eidut, but he'd be fine to judge. And therefore the Rabbanan are obviously not the authors of this Mishnah, or cannot be the ones who said this. Now the Gemara is going to bring a case. Osamiel David B'shivute, the Rabbi Yochanan. There was this blind individual, was in Rabbi Yochanan's neighborhood, David Kadayin Dino, that he was a judge. He was adjudicating cases. V'lo Gamerli, v'lo Midei. And Rabbi Yochanan didn't say anything to him. So he says, Eichi Abi Ochi, how can you do that? Now, Eino Chanami, if you hold like the Rabbonon, then it's not a problem. Even a Suma B'shteinav is fine. It doesn't tell us here whether he was a Suma B'achad Meinav, B'shteinav. But either way, according to the Chachamim, he would be kosher la'id. The only one it's a problem for is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir makes the hekesh between Nigaim and Rivim. So why is that present an issue? It's because Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Alocho k'stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan has a principle throughout Shas, that Alocho is always like a stam Mishnah. Here we have, in the Gemara Nida, a stam Mishnah, that says that when it comes to a judge, as Rabbi Yochanan says, the Tuye case of a judge that's blind in one eye, that they're disqualified. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have a Mishnah here that says a judge that is blind is disqualified from adjudicating. Yet, in his neighborhood, that's exactly what's going on. V'tanan, kol kosher ledun kosher la'id, v'yesh kosher la'id v'en kosher ledun, v'amrinu l'tuye mai, v'amr Rabbi Yochanan l'tuye sum v'achad meinav. So when it says, Rabbi Yochanan stama achrina ashkach, he found another Stam Mishnah, a Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Because there it says, Ditznan, Dine Mimonot, Danim Bayom, Vigumrim Balailo. When it comes to monetary matters, one can begin the proceedings during the day and finish them at night. Well, if you have the Hekesh between Nigaim and Rivim, we said before that one of those qualifications was just like Nigaim are during the day, so to Rivim, so to the court matters have to be during the day. The fact that this Mishnah says it's at night means it does not darshan that hekesh between Nigaim and Rivim. And if it doesn't darshan the hekesh, then it also doesn't have the disqualification of a judge to be blind. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan is holding like that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin. So I'm going to ask the obvious question, which is, am I only the Haistama, my Haistama? If you have two Stam Mishnahs, why do you pick the one in Sanhedrin instead of the one here? How do you know which one is Alocha Kistam Mishnah? When it says, number one, Ibai Deima, Stam Adarabim Adif. We know already over here that the Mishnah here is Aliba Darabi Meir, so it's a Dat Yachid, whereas the Mishnah in Sanhedrin is Aliba Dekulei Alma, or at least Aliba Darabim. So therefore, I have Alocha Yachid V'Rabim, Alocha Kirabim. Not only do I have Alocha Kistam Mishnah, but I have Alocha Kirabim, or Ibai Deima, Mushum Tonei Lo Agabi Hilchot Adedinei. Makes a lot more sense to say the Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin is normative, because it's found amongst the dinim that deal with court issues. It's in the world of dinim. The Mishnah over here is just brought down as a sidebar, parenthetically, because it's the same literary style or format as the first Mishnah in Nida. But it doesn't belong here, just a series of Mishnayot that were brought down together. So it makes more sense to give preference to a Mishnah that's found on location, meaning in the dinim of dinim, rather than a Mishnah that is found in the middle of Masechet Nida. So either one of those two reasons, Rabbi Yochanan gives precedence to the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, and by doing so, he paskins like the Rabbanon, that there is no hekesh between Nigaim and Rivim with this regard, and therefore, a judge who is blind, whether it's one eye or two eyes, is not disqualified from adjudicating. All right, next Mishnah. Again, following the same pattern we've seen until now, which is kol shechayav b'masrot mitamei tumat ochlim. Anything that's chayav b'masrot is obviously mitamei tumat ochlim, because a maser, by definition, to give maser, it has to be from ochel. So of course it can be mitamei tumat ochlim, but the reverse is not true. Yesh shemitamei tumat ochlim. There's some items that are food. Venom chayavim b'masrot, and not chayav b'masrot. Gemara says, Latuye Mai, where does that come to? Good, Latuye Basav, Dagim, Veveitzim. Obvious things like eggs, meat, and fish, all of which are classified as food, but yet they're not going to be chayav in Masrot. So you can have something that's classified as Ochel and have Tumat Ochlim, that will not be chayav in Maser. But you know, if it's chayav in Maser, you know by definition that it is Ochel. Now, Tosafot asks on this, it sounds like from the Amaras in Chulin, which we discussed when we did this in Chulin, that you do have Maaser is Noheg B'Tavlin, that Maaser does affect spices. Now that's going to present the problem, because when it comes to spices, spices do not have Tumat Ochlim. They only have Tumat Ochlim if they're mitzareif to the dish in which they're put in. They themselves don't inherently have Tumat Ochlim, which would be a problem for our Mishnah over here. Our Mishnah over here says that there's an automatic parallel. If you're chayav in maser, you're chayav in tumat ochlim. Yet by spices, we find that they're chayavim in maser, yet they're not, they don't have themselves tumat ochlim. They only have tumat ochlim when they're mitzareif to something else. So that would be against this Mishnah. Tosafot makes an important distinction, which is that there are two types of tavlin. There is a tavlin that is the sole purpose of that spice is to spice, to give flavor. There are other items where the item itself is edible, plus it's used to spice. For examples of that are onion, garlic, things that themselves can be eaten, but they're also used as a spice or as a ancillary to any other food item. So Tosafot says when the Gemara in Chulin says that tavlin have a din maser, it's talking about things like onions and garlic, where they do have a shame ochlim, independent of their ability to spice. When they're used as a spice, yes, they're tefel, they're secondary to the primary item that they are spicing, but nevertheless, they have tumat ochlim, because they are ochel. But, on the other hand, there's another type of spice, which sole purpose is to spice. That spice does not have tumat maser, and also there will not have tumat ochlim, except in the context of the ochel that it's connected to. So Tosafot makes that important distinction in Maser Tavlin as to whether it's just pure spices or it's a spicing item that can also be an ochel in other contexts. And then the next Mishnah is called Shechayav B'Pe'ah. And then it's Chayav B'Pe'ah is by definition Chayav in Masrot, because the qualifications for Masrot are fewer than those for Pe'ah. V'yesh Chayav B'Masrot. There are certain things that are Chayav in Masrot V'Einau Chayav B'Pe'ah, but they will not be Chayav in Pe'ah. Latuye Mai. What does that come to include? Latuye Teina, V'Yerek She'enu Chayav B'Pe'ah. That's like things like figs and vegetables that are Chayav in Masrot, but they are not Chayavin in Pe'ah. I'm going to explain that in 1 second. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Pe'ah discussing what are the qualifications to be Chayav in Pe'ah. This is the principles for knowing when something is chayav in peyah. Kol shu ochel, number one, it has to be a food. Vinishmar, something that is not left to efker. Vigidulom and aretz, number three, is it grows out of the ground. Number four is glikitogto ke'echad, it's harvested in one shot. Or number five is machniso l'kiyum, it can be stored for a duration of time. If it has all of those five qualifications, then it's chayav in peyah. Tomorrow in 1 second we'll go through each of these items to explain what they exclude. Rashi points out that this is learned out of the Pasuk because it says in Vayikra, Ubikurtzachem, Ekitziratzachem, Lo Techalet Vatzadcha, that when you harvest your field, do not cover, take away the Peah, the corner. Leave the corner for the Aniim. So that Hekesh between Kitzira, harvest, and Peah is where we learn this all from. Only things that are Kurtzachem, Ekitziratzachem, that you harvest them as one, you put them into the Otsar, all of these qualifications are learnt out of the fact of this Hekesh connection between Tzira and Peah. Ochel, Temeute. So when it comes to food items, this comes to exclude Tzviche, Steam, Vikotza. Rashi has a Girsa, another Girsot, and other places are Stis, Vikotza. The translation that I saw were Wode and Matter. They are dyes that come from these items, a red dye, and likely a blue dye. Okay, you have woad and safflower. Either way, they are used for dyes. What's interesting here, it says sfichim. These are the aftergrowths, not the primary growth, but the aftergrowth. Rashi speculates it's because the primary item was used for eating, and that only the aftergrowths were used for dyeing. Tosafot suggests that maybe the sfichim were just better dyes. Not that the primary were not dyes, but the aftergrowths, for whatever reason, were better for dyeing. Vinishmar, what does it mean that it's guarded? Limute efker. That's something that people just let grow wild. It's something that people put in their fields, plant it, and then watch it. Vigidulom in aretz, that it grows out of the land, out of the ground. Limute, that comes to exclude kmeim of pitriot. It's like fungus, mushrooms, truffles, things that do not grow directly from the ground. Now, the Gemara in other places says that they do grow on the ground. Then they just yonek min avir, right? They just take their sustenance from the avir, and the Gemara in other places changes the girsa. I told you it says it's probably true here. It should not say gidulo min aretz, but rather inikato min aretz would be the proper way to have it in the Mishnah. Right, next is v'lekitado keachad. Your question that has to be harvested in one shot. The meute teina. This comes to exclude a fig. Figs ripen not all at once. But rather, figs ripen over a period of time. Some of the tree ripens, and then it continues to ripen over a period of time. We'll see in a second why that might be, that this is an exclusion. And the last thing is, omachniso l'kiyum, it can be stored. So this is near time, which is a significant issue, is the mutei yerek, is vegetables. Without refrigeration, vegetables have a shelf life, a very, very short shelf life, and they must be eaten immediately right after they're picked. There is no duration to vegetables. And for that reason, yerek is not classified as being something that's machnisol de kuyum, something that can be stored over time. That's not true, obviously, by grains, by fruits that do also have a short shelf life. They used to either dry them out, make them into a syrup. They did something that allowed them to be stored over a long period of time. Yerek, vegetables were the things that they could not do unless they pickled them. That would be the only way to store them over a long duration. But in general, yerek does not go into the kiyum. V'ilu gabe maser, by maser it says, these are the qualifications. By maser it says, koshu ochel, it has to be a food. We just saw that from the previous mission as well. Vinishmar, it still has the same requirement that it be something that people plant and they don't just let grow. Be'evger, v'gidlo min aretz, again, the same idea, that's v'ini kato min aretz. Then you're chayav v'masrot. V'ilu, the two that they're missing are, l'kito ke'achad, u'machniso l'kiyum, lo k'toni. Those are not qualifications by maser. So therefore, what's excluded? The two things that we mentioned by that. Machnisol kiyum is yerek. Therefore, yerek is patur by peyah, but yet chayav b'maser. The kitoke echad, we said, was exclude te'ina. So te'inim are p'turim min ha-peyah, but they are chayavin in masrot. Tosfot asks a very basic question. It says, why? We know min ha-Torah, that when it comes to peyah and to masrot, the only thing that's chayav mid'oraita is dagan, tirosh, v'yitzar, which is grains, olives, and grapes, or grape juice, or wine, and shemen. Those are the only things that are chayav min ha-Torah. So when we're talking about here, we're talking about a rabbinic level obligation. Why did the chachamim see fit in making a rabbinic obligation to make them chayavin in maser and not chayavim in peyah? Why would you make such a distinction between the two? Tosafot says, because of the nature of the matnot aniyim, or the matanot. Maser is something that is taken in by the balim, and then distributed afterwards by the balim in whatever manner they want, or in one shot. But by pe'ah, the aniyim wait for the balim to harvest, and to leave a corner of the field over for them. The problem is, for instance, by te'inim. By te'inim, since it's not the kitadan ke'achad, they're not all gathered in one shot. The pe'ah is going to be left. The aniyim never really know when the pe'ah is going to be left. So what the chachamim says, it's not worth it to have the aniyim wait around for this pe'ah, because we must see what they could have gotten in other fields had they waited in other fields. This is just not a crop worth waiting around, because we'll never know when the balei bayit is going to take them all off and there's going to be pe'ah. Same thing with yerek. Yerek, because of its short shelf life, the value of the yerek in terms of pe'ah is very low. So what they did was they did a tova for the aniyim and said, don't wait around for this type of peyah. This type of peyah is not worth it. And therefore they were not gozer peyah on these items, despite the fact that they were gozer masrot on these items. So Tosafot says that's what the fundamental difference between why these items, which are on a big level, chayavim masrot, are not chayavim bepeyah. Right now it continues. If they have amongst them garlic or onions, they are chayavim. Why is that? It's not. We have a Mishnah in Pe'ah. Malbenot bitzalim. You have rows of onions, shebena yerek, that are in between other vegetables. So you're growing peppers. And then in between the pepper rows, you have onions that are growing. So Rabbi Yossi Omer Pe'ah mikol achad v'achad. Rabbi Yossi says you take off Pe'ah from each row. Each row is considered to be an independent field because they're separated by another vegetable in between. You can still give one Pe'ah on all of the onions, even though they're alternating rows or they're not all in a sequential layout in the field. So that's why if you have shumim u'bitzalim, that they are chayavin here in Ma'aser, as well as being chayav in Pe'ah. There's a differentiation between Yerek, where there is no Pe'ah, but when you have Shumim and Bitzalim, then there is a Chiyuv of Pe'ah, because they are Machnis L'Kiyum. Root vegetables do have the ability to be stored, as opposed to right, the other vegetables, which do not have Machnis L'Kiyum, don't have a long shelf life. Alright, so Amar Rabbi Rachana Rabbi Yochanan, Ulshin Shezer'an Mitchilal Be'ema, endives, that were planted originally for animal feed, and then he decides afterwards that he wants to use them for human consumption. Then, you need to have a machshavat ochlin after they're picked. Because, kasavar, machshavat chibur lo shmei machshava. And as a machshava while they're still in the ground, that is not considered to be a machshava. So, since he originally planted them for a behema, and they never entered the world of achilat adam, once they enter the world of achilat adam, they can't leave the world of achilat adam until they're pasul me'achilat kelev. But since originally he planted them for a behema, they were not in the world of ochlim for adam. When they're not in the world of ochlim for adam, they're not going to be kabel tumat ochlim. But then he decides in the middle, I'm not going to give this to my animals, I want this for human consumption. When he does that, he can only make that change after the picking of the endives, not while the endives are still growing in the ground. Because, as he points out, the Gemara points out here, he must hold that machshava while you're attached to the ground is not a qualified machshava.
Machshava while planted?
They're in the ground, while planted, and then once they're harvested. So those are the three points in time. While you're planting, you can have a machshava that impacts. Once they're in the ground, your machshava will not impact. And then once they leave the ground, your machshava will impact once again. So that would be the way to lay it out. Amarava Avana Nami Tanina, we have a Mishnah that supports this understanding of Rabba Bar Chana, which is that by Tumat Nevelat Ha'of, something we bumped into many times, Tumat Nevelat Ha'of, Nevelat Ha'of has no Tumah except for when you swallow it. When you swallow it, when it reaches the Beit HaBliyah, it causes the Adam to come Tameh, his Begadim to become Tmeim as well. So that is the nature of Nevelat Ha'of. So Gemara, he misses the Mishnah. It's a Mishnah, again, we've quoted numerous times. 13 things, Namru v'Nevelat Ha'of. There are 13 things about Nevelat Ha'of Tahor, but this is one of them. Tzricha machshava, v'ena tzricha yachsher. It needs a machshava. Generally, Nevelat Ha'of Tahor, the default status is that it's not ochel. That's the default status. V'ena tzricha yachsher. And it does not require hechsher, the kabel tumah. We'll see that later in the Gemara. We also saw this before in Chulin and other places as well, that since sofo, the tamei tumah chamura, since the end, it can cause a high level of tumah, therefore, it does not require hechsher lekabel tumah. Hechsher lekabel tumah is only for low levels of tumah, and only for a low level of tumah that won't reach a high level of tumah. Here, if you swallow it, it will cause an ava tumah, so therefore, it does not require hechsher lekabel tumah. Alma, what do you see from this? Machshevet chayim lo shma machshava. While it's alive, the fact that he wanted to eat it. When it's alive, what is he thinking of this bird? It's a kosher bird. He's thinking, when I shech this bird, I'm going to eat it. It's designated for ochel. That machshava has no impact because he has to wait until afterwards to have machshevet ochlim on the nevela tov tor. So just like over there, that alma, machshevet chayim lo shma machshava, that when it's alive, the machshava has no impact. Achanami, machshavet chibur, lo shma machshava. While it's still in the ground, the machshava has no impact. Till it reaches the point of designation where you could make it into what it is, So here, by nevela tov tor, while it's alive, it's not an ochel. As long as it's alive, it's not an ochel, even though you intend to eat it. And we would assume that the machsheret ochlim would not leave it just because it became a nevela. Because if you conject it, and that was your machsheva, just because it became a nevela, your machsheva doesn't leave. But what do you see? It does. It has no impact, your machsheva, because while it's alive, it cannot be an ochel. Therefore, your machsheva is not impactful. Only once it's a nevela tov tor, then your machsheva is impactful, because there could be ochel. So to hear, by the vegetation, by the endives, you cannot have a machshava while they're in the ground, because they can't be an ochel while they're in the ground. Only after they're picked, where they can be an ochel, will your machshava have impact. So that's the parallel that Rava draws between the Mishnah by Nevela Tov Tor and Rabbi Rechanan's statement over here. Machshava for ochlin only has impact when they can be an ochel. When they're in a stage where they cannot be an ochel, your machshava will not have impact. So Rabbi Zera says, Amar hacha begozel shenafal min aroma skinan. Delo abakaman delachshov alei. Rabbi Zera creates a ukimta in that Mishnah in Tarot that says that by nevela tov tor, you can only have a machshava after the fact, is because the bird was not in front of us beforehand. The bird fell out of the sky. It wasn't in our possession beforehand that we would have had a machshava ochlim. The reason you only have a machshava now is because that's when we had the bird. Had we had the bird before and had a machshava ochlim, it would have worked. It's just it wasn't in our possession beforehand. So by doing that, Rabbi Zera eliminates that Mishnah for being approved to Rabbi Barchano. Wait a minute, we have a case which is going to come up in the Gemara where they had a Tarnagolot, that chicken in Yavne, exactly this situation in Vela Tov Tor. And over there they said that the Machshava afterwards was what made it into Ochlim. So what are you going to say about that? Here we're talking about a domesticated bird, a bird that was in front of us, and yet Machshava was only helpful at the point when it became a nevela, not beforehand. So Michael, Meimar Malay, so Rabbi Zera responds to him, Tarnagolet Bara Havo. It was a wild rooster. Achiku Alei, they laughed at Rabbi Zera. Tarnagolet Bara, you're talking about a wild rooster, Of Tameu. That is a non-kosher animal. Of Tamei Mika Mitamo. And we're talking about a Tameuf. The Gemara later on says that the Tumah that we're talking about is Tumah Bliya. And that Tumah Bliya doesn't impact an Nevela Tov Tamei. It's only applicable to an Nevela Tov Tor. So you need a kosher bird. So Amar lo Abaye, very interesting and important chinuch aspect. Abaye says, back to the students, Gabar Abba Amar Milta Lo Tachiku Alei. Someone of Rav Zera Sarastra says something, you don't laugh at him. So the students laughed because that Rav Zera's solution makes no sense. Abaye says, you gotta have respect for someone who's a lot older than you and a lot wiser than you. You must have misinterpreted what he said. Tarnagolet shemerda. What do you mean, tarnagol bara? No, it doesn't mean a wild rooster. It means a chicken that rebelled. Oh my bara. What does it mean, bara, that it's in the wild? Divrai mimara. It left its master. I mean, it was originally a domesticated chicken that rebelled and took off, took flight, went off into the field. And then it reproduces there. So it is wild from the sense that we don't have it in front of us, but it comes from a kosher strain. So therefore, it would be an example of that. And Rapapa Amar, because Rapapa says, Tarnagolata de Agma Hava, that it was a water chicken, a swamp hen. Rapapa de Tamei de Mar Rapapa Tarnagol de Agma Sur. When it comes to a rooster of the swamp, it's a sur. Tarnagolata de Agma, when it comes to the hen of the swamp, then shario, it is mutar. V'simanech, and the way to remember that is amoni v'lo amonit. When it comes to accepting of gerim, we accept the female, we do not accept the male from amon. So because of that, here too, you'll remember that the male is considered to be an of tamei, and the female is considered to be a of tahor. So where it says, Daresh Mememar, Tanagolota de Agma Sira, the Tarnagolot Adama that Rapapa says is a kosher strain is asur, because Chazur Rabbanan the darts of Achlo. Rabbanan see that it has Dores and Ochel, Vaina Giruta, and it's the equivalent of a Giruta, which is a strain of Of Tamei, a Murhen, that for sure is Tamei. And since it's Dores, the Chachamim were clear that it was part of that species. Why is there Dores? Can be one of two things Rashi brings down. Either Dores mean that it takes its Ochel in its claws, takes its food in its claws, not directly into its beak, or number two is that it uses its claws in a tensile manner, which is that it eats while holding onto its food and it rips its food away from the larger object with its claws. It doesn't just peck it up and use its beak. So since it had that siman of an dof tamei, we say no, it's part of the species of Geruta, it's not kasher. The fundamental question that you have to ask here is, according to Rav Papa, how could you have in a single species of animal that the male is tamei and the female is tahor? How could that be? Imagine that. They mate, and then if they have a male offspring, it's tamei. If they have a female offspring, it's tahor. How could that be? So Tosavot asks that question. Tosavot gives two solutions to the problem. The first solution is very interesting. He says, Zachar osur, lefish ein no simanei tahara. Velo shari mitam kol yotzei min haTorah tahor. And it's not mutar because anything that is kosher, that gives birth to something, is automatically kosher. Shara'im lo yalda hayefroach. The mother does not give birth to the chick. Ela beitzim itila. It gives birth, it lays eggs. Ve'efroach me'afroka gadil. And the chick grows out of the ground. Now it's not clear to me here what Tosavot means. I don't know if he means it grows from the egg itself, or it means something along the lines of spontaneous generation. It's not clear. The ne'esar mimeila ayadei simanei tuma. So since it's not a direct offspring of the female bird, it's really a production of the egg and the ground. Therefore, it could be a separate entity. V'nekeva nami eno osra, the man da'aser zivzeh gorein. And even according to one who says when you have two causes that it's a sur, here you have a male and a female that produce a female. So you have the male which is not kosher that is contributing. Again, for the same reasoning, because da'efroch lo yatzel amina beitza umiafrak kagodo. It was born from an egg and it grew out of the ground. It's not really a product of the mating of the two. It's a very interesting answer of Tosafot, how he says that the laying of eggs makes them not direct offspring of their parents. And that's how you have a species that has males and females, that one is kosher, one is not kosher, and they could reproduce, and depending on which gender it is, one will be kosher, one will be non-kosher. Again, I don't know if Tosafot is subscribing to spontaneous generation or to the idea that the egg itself is self-sustaining, one of those two items, but it's a very interesting idea. The more likely answer is what Tosafot says in the second answer, which is, Mianir Ikar Dishnei Minim Heim, that they are two different species. That even though one is called the rooster and one is called the hen or the chicken, nevertheless, they are two different species. And in that species, both the male and female would be kosher. And in the species that's tamei, that's not kosher, both the male and female would be not kosher. What they're describing here is not a gender of a bird, rather a type or a species of bird. And that would be the distinguishing factor that we're making over here.
A
species, correct. It makes a lot more sense. I'm just saying that. First point, answer, those are just conceptually, it's a very interesting answer. See, the second answer is more likely. But what we have now is, we have Rabbi Zeir suggesting that that case in Yavne is not a case where they had access to the bird beforehand. So since they didn't have access to the bird beforehand, therefore, you can't prove anything from the Mishnah about Nevela Tov Tor. Because maybe the case of Nevela Tov Tor is only when the bird comes in front of us as a Nevela. And that's why the Machshava happened then. But had we had access to the bird beforehand, then a Machshava beforehand would have been efficacious. And that would not be a proof to Rabbi Bar Chana. We can't assume that they did have access and the Machshava was meaningless. Because maybe they didn't have access. That's where the Gemara is now. Now, Tan Rabbanan, here is the case. Gozel, Shnafal the Gat. You have a bird that falls into the vats of wine. V'chicheva lav laluto ukuti. Falls in there, dies, drowns in the vat of wine. Then the balim think about it and say, listen, it's a dead bird. Let me give it to my friend the kuti to eat it. So then it's tamei. It's tamei, number one, because now he's had machshev dochlim on it. And number two is, it gives tuma off to the vat of wine because it's automatically, we said before, it doesn't require hechsher. It's automatically tamei because it will end up being tuma chamura, therefore it has tuma right away. Tuma kala right away. The kelev tahor. If he thinks about giving it to his dog, then it's tahor. V'yochanan ben Nuri omer af the kelev tamei. Even if he thinks about it for a kelev, it's tamei. Now the reason for that is not that because Rabbi Yochanan thinks makshev kelev, the makshev of a dog is enough. He just thinks you don't need makshev at all. That it's automatically ochel and you don't need any makshev at all, and that's why it's tamei. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So now we're going to have a conversation between Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Rabbanon. It's somewhat cryptic. I'll explain it as much as I can. The Gemara will come back and ask piece by piece on it. So he says, Kavachomer, imetamei tumah chamura shelo b'machshava. Later on in the Vayot Tov Torah, if you swallow it, will be imetamei tumah chamura without any machshava. Lo imetamei tumah kala shelo b'machshava. Certainly it should be imetamei tumah kala without any active thought to make it into ochel. Amrlo, lo! So it doesn't come to that. So that was the cryptic statement. The Gemara will come back and ask, what does that mean? So he says, back to then, Tarnagolot v'yavne tochiach. This case of this Tarnagolot v'yavne will prove it to you. That it does come that way. And over there, the Chachamim said it was tamei without any required machshava. Amrlo, misham raya. What do you mean? There's no proof from there. There were non-Jews standing around, and they thought they were going to give it to them for achila. But my eskina. Now the Gemara goes back and says, what is going on over here? So let's start. Ilema, this nevelat of tor that fell into the vat of wine, where was it located? Ilema b'kruchim, this happened in a city. Lama la makshava. Even according to Rabbanon, why do you require makshava? Vatnan. The Mishnah in Uksin that tells us, a nevelat b'ema Torah. A kosher animal that died, b'chol makom, it's considered ochel, because people eat it. Everywhere it's considered ochila. Nevelot oftor, v'chelev. When it comes to nevelot of an oftor, and chelev, and the fats that are serim, b'krachim, ein tzrichim, lo makshava, v'lo echsher. In the krachim, you do not require a makshava, and you do not require a echsher. That is because in the krachim, there are many eaters. There's always a shortage of food, and therefore a nevelat of tor is considered to be something that people would eat on a regular basis, therefore it does not require a special machshevet ochlim. And the same thing with chelev. And lo echsher is because...
So for the tamei, tuma chamura.
Ella, so what are you going to suggest now about kfarim? It's in the villages? So here in the city, nobody requires a machshevet to make it into ochlim. So why do the chachamim require a machshevet? So it must be it's in the villages. So it says, in the villages, in the villages, everybody requires a makshava. Now, truthfully, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri does not require. But we have a Mishnah, again in Uksin, which is the other side. Nevelat beima tmeya. When it comes to a nevelat beima tmeya b'chol makom, it's not considered to be ochel. No matter what, it's not la'achila. And the default status is that it's not ochel. That's everywhere. Unevelat of tofor b'kfarim. When it comes to the veil of an oftor in the villages, tzricha machshava, over there you need an active machshava, v'ena tzricha yekshir. The reason you need active machshava is because you're in the villages, and not a lot of eaters. It's not by default that people are going to eat it. So we have here the default of an veilat be'ema Torah is that it's ochel. The default of an veilat be'ema tmeya is that it's not ochel. Unless, of course, you have machshava about it. By veilat oftor in the cities, the default is that it's ochel. In the villages, the default is that it's not ochel. So what was the case over here in the Mishnah that we brought down from Tarot? What's the case here that the gozel that fell into the gut? If it's in the kvachim, if it's in the city, then why do you require a makshav at all? So now we're in the kvarim. So if the kvarim, then you do require makshav, and then why is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri say you don't require makshav? So what's going on? Where is it? So I'm Rabbi Zeira Bar Chanina al Olam Bikrach. We're in the city. It's in the city, but when it fell into the vat of wine, that made it disgusting. And therefore it lost its default status as ochel. And therefore the Tanakhama says he requires you to have active makshava again. Yochanan ben Nuri doesn't require makshava at all. That is the solution to our problem. They made it into the city, but a case of the city where it looks like a village. And by doing that, they can explain why, number one, the Chachamim require a makshava, and why Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would say by default, it is an ochel in that case. Now the Gemara moves on to discuss the next line in the Mishnah. Before we do that, I just want to mention that Rashi points out over here, that if you have a nevelat behemat mea, by nevelat behemat mea, it gives off tuma. It's an ava tuma, it's mitamei adam, if he carries it with his bigadim. So why do you here have to require a makshavat ochlim? What is a makshevet ochlim going to do? Kazayin nevela is mitamei, even if it's not ochel, it's a nevela. It has nothing to do with ochel. So Rashi points out here, we've seen this in the other gemaras as well, is what happens if you have less than a kazayit? Well, less than a kazayit is not meaningful in terms of tumat ochlim. The minimum for tumat ochlim is a kabeitza to pass on tumat. So that's what Rashi says here. It's a case where you have less than a kabeitza of other ochlim. And they're missing just less than a kazayit. And then you get a less than a kazayit of nevela, and together they're going to make up a kabeitza. So together they can have tumat ochlim and pass on tumat. It's tumat ochlim. As a kazayit nevela, it's not meaningful anymore, because there is no kazayit here, it's less than a kazayit nevela. But as uchel, it will have impact, and therefore the machshev ochlim will be meaningful over here. Rashi over here says, it needs to be the size of kebeitza to accept tumah. That is a sheet of Rabbeinu Tam as well in many places in Shas. Tosafot rejects it, and Rashi himself gives the alternative shot in other places, which is to accept tumah. Most Rishonim believe that a kol shu can accept tumah zochlim. Pass on tumah, you need a kebeitza size to pass it on. Over here, Rashi says to accept tumah, it needs to be the size of a kebeitza, and again, that's the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam as well in many places in Shas, that to accept tumah, you need to be the size of a kebeitza. And the din would be true as well with passing on of tumah. It only passes on tumah if it's a kebeitza, and therefore this less than a kezayit in a vela can be mitzaref to make it into ochel of a kebeitza, pass on tumah, according to Rashi here and Rabbeinu Tam in other places, to accept tumah. So now we say, what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri mean in his Kav Chomer? Since Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Kav Chomer, imit tamah tumat chamura shelo b'makshava, lo tetamei tumah kala shelo b'makshava. The Rabbanan responded and said, Amru lo, ima mar b'tumah chamura shekein enu yored adakach. My, you know, you're out of the kach. What does it mean? It doesn't come like that. Amarov achi kamrele. Lo yimamarta bituma chamura shikain eno saka yotze ba. It does not make the level of tumah that it conveys cannot do what it does. For instance, over here, I'm talking about the nevelat of tohor. If it's swallowed, it's an ava tumah, and therefore makes the person into a rishon the tumah, and it affects his bigadim, can affect the dam the kelim. But the individual becomes tameh, cannot affect another adam or kelim, because he's already a rishon the tumah. And a rishon l'tumah does not impact on adam and kelim. It only affects ochlim u'mashkim. So there's a drop down in the level of tumah. It can affect the item itself, the tumah chamura, can affect something of a higher level. But when the other object that is mekabel l'tumah only affects objects of a lower level. That's not true by tumah kala. Shoseka yotzeba. By tumah kala, you can have a rishon l'tumah that makes it into a sheni the tumah, and a sheni can make a shlishi the tumah. By ochlin, midr rabbanan, ochel can be mitame ochel. So you can have the same level of tumah be passed on, meaning not that it's the same grade of tumah, it's just that the same item that you're mitame with the higher level of tumah can be also nitma, yaday the lower level of tumah. So that's the distinction the rabbanan are drawing. They're saying, wait a minute, how can you compare the two? By tumah chamura, it's a different classification of tumah. And so that's why it doesn't require machshava. Over here, this is a lower class of tumah. That's why it does not require machshava. So I'm like, "Bye, kol techeinu." Then it makes even a bigger kal v'chomer. Umat tumah chamura de kilo, tumah chamura that has a kula in it. Deino saki yotzeba, that it doesn't have its own tumah. It can only make one level of tumah. Then the next item cannot do the same. But tumah shelo b'machshava, it becomes tamei without a machshava. Tumah kalo, when we're talking about lighter forms of tumah, dechamiro, dechamur, the osig yotzeba, that it can maintain and give off the same tumah, it, and the item that it makes tamei can both be mitamei ochlim, enu dine, shint mitamah shelo b'machshava, then certainly, shvi tamah shelo b'machshava. So then, we'll leave, the Gemara continues, element of sheshit, I'm gonna stop here, because the Gemara continues significantly down this amud, and we'll continue that with tomorrow. What Rav Sheshit is, suggestion is about what was meant by the response of the Chachamim to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay, we'll stop over here.